The following talk was given by Father John Hardin, July 15th through 19th, 1998, Retreat for Men.
Our present meditation is on the fruits of the Holy Spirit, especially the fruit of chastity. You might have wondered when are we going to get to the fruits of the Holy Spirit. As we know, the Holy Spirit confers three supernatural blessings on everyone in the state of grace. Confers the virtues or powers of faith, hope, and charity. Confers the gifts of wisdom, understanding, knowledge, counsel, fortitude, piety, and fear of the Lord. And the Holy Spirit also confers the fruits of the Holy Spirit. What are the fruits of the Holy Spirit? They are the supernatural works that, according to St. Paul, manifest the presence of the Holy Spirit. And the manifestation is in two ways. First, for the person who performs these good works, the Holy Spirit gives supernatural happiness. That's why they are called fruits. The Latin verb, fruit, to enjoy. And secondly, the fruits of the Holy Spirit also give others who witness the good works performed by believing Christians, give others a testimony that God is doing in human beings what human beings could not do by themselves. In other words, when we speak of the fruit of the Holy Spirit being supernatural, we mean superhuman, humanly impossible. Needless to say, we could now, have a series of 12 meditations. We mean 3 more days. I asked the Holy Spirit to enlighten me. Which of these 12 fruits of the Holy Spirit should I concentrate on? I chose chastity. First, let me read what St. Paul, in his letter to the Galatians, writes. In Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. First, St. Paul describes the works of the evil spirit. Let me just mention them. Fornication, uncleanness, immodesty, luxury, idolatry, witchcraft, enmity, contentions, envy, wrath, quarrels, dissension, sects, murder, drunkenness, reveling, and ads, and such like. having spelled out what the evil spirit produces, he goes on, what the fruit of the Spirit, capitalized, the Holy Spirit. The fruits are charity, joy, peace, patience, benignity, goodness, longanimity, mildness, faith, modesty, continency, and chastity. You notice there are 12 fruits of the Holy Spirit. As we've said, I will concentrate on chastity. However, in St. Paul's identification of the fruits of the Holy Spirit, he has no less than three fruits, all having to do with chastity, modesty, continence, and chastity. Modesty is chaste behavior. Continence is interior chastity. And chastity as such, a generic term for the practice of chastity, both in the body and in the soul. That was my way of introduction. Now the focus of our meditation, the subtitle of our present conference is Interior Chastity in the Gospels. First, to refresh our memories, Christ elevated chastity beyond anything ever commanded in the old law. He first of all elevated marital chastity. He restored marriage to its monogamous state. There was no monogamy even required of the Jews. There has been no monogamy in any religion in human history ever since, except authentic, honest to God Catholic Christianity. And notice what we've said. Christ elevated chastity to its condition as marital chastity, to what it had been before the fall of our first parents. He told them, two in one flesh, no more. Only two. With the fall of the human race, God allowed, and I use the verb advisedly, God allowed polygamy. God allowed divorce and remarriage. But as Christ told the Pharisees, remember, and they complained, the man puts away his wife, marries another, he commits adultery. If she marries another, she commits adultery. But they told him, Master, how come Moses allowed us men to divorce our wives and marry another woman? Remember Jesus' answer. It was because of the hardness of your hearts. We see theologically that God tolerated divorce and remarriage. He tolerated polygamy. With the coming of Christ, talk about elevating chastity. married people, only one wife, one husband. In the polygamy, even for the Muslims, by divine law, since the coming of Christ, the Muslims, every Muslim nation in the world, legalizes polygamy. Sorry, my dear disciple of Muhammad. No one, all human beings are now provided with the grace to live a monogamous life. Christ then first elevated marital chastity, as we've just described. But he also elevated chastity in every state of life to a new dignity by prescribing not only chastity of the body, but chastity of the heart. In other words, interior chastity. And Christ did so in two New Testament contexts, and both not coincidentally from the Gospel of St. Matthew, written, as we know, for the converts from Judaism. No wonder so few Jews were converted by Christ, and even St. Paul. The first text occurs in Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 and 28. It reads, "If it was said to the ancients, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you, anyone who so much as looks with lust at a woman has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Talk about elevating the sixth commandment. I've said this, I'm sure, at least once before while teaching at the State University. One of my students, an Orthodox Jew, after I finished class, he came and said, "Dr. Harden, did I hear you say that if I look at a beautiful woman walking along the streets and want to have sex with her, then I'm committing a sin?" I said, "Yes." He told me, "That's impossible." I'm pleased to report I asked him to come to my office. I called him, he was in his senior year, for the rest of the year. On graduation day, his parents from Brooklyn, New York, thanked me for helping their son. Straightening out his sex life. That's the first quotation. The second quotation is again from St. Matthew, chapter 5, verse 8. Here Jesus says in the Beatitudes, "Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God." Now first as we've been doing an explanation and then being a retreat, the application. In comparing the Old Testament with the New, on the level of chastity, Christ is saying that his followers are forbidden even to lust internally. This refers to both men and women. I never tire repeating when our Holy Father said to an audience of women in Rome, when Jesus said, not a man, not looking lustfully at a woman, otherwise he commits adultery with her in his heart. My dear ladies, this refers to you too. If a woman looks at a man lustfully, she commits adultery with him in her heart. Is this ever important today? I know women how lustful women can be, and how shrewdly they can hide their lechery. I repeat, how cleverly women can seduce men. We continue Christ's teaching as he quoted from St. Matthew's Gospel. Tells us that the adultery forbidden is any sin against chastity. In both the Old Testament, but with emphasis in the New, the word adultery, as we just quoted from Matthew's Gospel, used by Jesus, refers to all sins against chastity. Masturbation, fornication, homosexuality, and of course, in the textual sense, adultery. We are told by Christ that is why, and why we're having both this meditation, why Christ went out of his way to show how he was elevating, raising the commandment of God far beyond anything ever prescribed in the old law. What is Christ telling us? We must control our wills, not only our external sins against chastity. We are to control our desires. As we've said, there's no control over desires without controlling our thoughts. And there's no controlling our thoughts without controlling the source of our thoughts, which is our sense experiences. What we see, what we hear, what we read. And Christ's reference to the eyes. Remember, if anyone even looks at a woman lustfully, crucially important, before we close this retreat, how crucially important it is for us. I'm speaking to men, masculine gender, to watch our eyes. Otherwise, we will never, never practice the chastity which Christ tells us is a condition even for our salvation. You just cannot. No way. You just cannot live a chaste life, whether externally, our stress in this meditation, internally, unless we decide, and please God, you will resolve to practice. What word shall I use? Mortification of the eyes, mastery of our eyes. You with your eyes, I with mine. and the world in which we are living, how well it knows how powerful a stimulus to sex are the eyes. I'm sure I've said this before. The annual cost of advertising in our country each year, advertising is a $170 billion industry just in the United States. Living in New York for 14 years, I've come to know, I came to know New York and its advertising industry. I was told by professional advertisers, one of our principal ways of getting products bought, what I defined advertising as, remember, when people buy what they don't need and money they don't have. One of our principal means of promoting what we are selling is sex. I was told doctorates in psychology are hired by the advertising industries to seduce both men and women sexually. They continue. When Christ warns both men, and the Bible of Christ tells us also women, to guard their eyes, he is telling us, either we watch and notice what I am saying, and I'm repeating, we see many things that are sexually seductive. But what a difference between seeing something and looking at it. I was spoke during my 14 years in New York to dressmakers. How well they know how women should dress in order to make them, shall I say, attractive or seductive. And that's back in the, in the late 80s, a woman's dress, advertised, in a storefront, $600. Is a multi-billion-dollar industry. Hell, those who promote sales, how well they know how to get their products bought. I repeat, modesty of the eyes is imperative to remain chaste. I'm speaking as a man, masculine gender, to men, masculine gender. We must discipline our senses, our sense of sight. Remember David, the great King David, and Bathsheba. Remember? The stupid king saw this beautiful woman naked. He looked at her in much on the life of David, we read the Old Testament, is a price he paid, and the chosen people paid for his one lack of control of his eyes. I can give you a retreat. It's not a lecture in theology. Christ could not have either plainer or more forthright. Remember, and it's in this context that Jesus said, if your eyes are scandalized, remember, pluck out your eye. Better go to heaven, minus one, or even both eyes, than go to hell with both eyes. See, now Father Ligori, the Father of the Redemptorists, and the Church's universal patron of confessors, wrote over 100 books. I'm still trying to catch up. See, Alphonsus, according to Alphonsus, most of the people in hell are there because of sins against chastity. I like that. I believe it. All the talk about sanctity is so much, pardon the expression, pious pap. Unless we practice the virtue of interior chastity. And the price of interior chastity means guarding our senses, especially our eyes. What resolutions we should make, all of us, including me, in this retreat, to ensure that we will get to heaven. Because we have practiced chastity. And let me tell you, this applies not only as much to married men as single women or single men, but I dare say it applies even more to married men than to single men. I'm talking from 50 years of priestly experience. How many wives have told me? I am married just 1 month. But Father, I have washed my husband's eyes. In some social gathering, I notice he looks at women in the room. I told him, Jim, you're now a married man. What did I do? I know what I'm talking about. Am I clear? And a husband, naturally, and shall I even say supernaturally, experiencing, well, the divinely given joys of marriage. Shall I say it? Women, do you know this? Get older. Did you know that? They become, well, I don't want to use the word aged. Over the years of my priesthood, there may be exceptions. I don't know about them. Every failure against marital chastity by the husband has been in favor of a younger woman, and his wife. The one who was, well, more attractive, and the spouse, to me swore he would remain faithful until death. Am I still making sense?